welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, my partners in the Redbud City coffee roasters business, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, I'm enjoying a hot cup of Redbud City coffee this morning. I hope you are as well. Piper, tell the listeners where they can find this great coffee.
If you go to redbudcoffee.com, you can find it. I have about a quarter of a pot of the Kenyan roast sitting waiting for me when we finish this, because I've already drunk three quarters of it. So you'd think I'd be energized, but yeah, Redbud Coffee, they've been a partner of ours for several months now. They have a rotating collection of roasts from around the world, Brazil, Costa Rica, Kenya, etc. You can go check those out. They sell them ground or whole bean. And various sizes. So if you're a coffee junkie, or if you're buying coffee for like your whole church, you can do that. They have bulk sizes. Again, go to redbudcoffee.com. Use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout. You get a 10% discount off of your entire purchase. So it doesn't matter how much you order. Just use the code HAPPYRANT. You get the 10% off and the great coffee.
Awesome, Pipe. Thank you. And if you're in New York, LA, or Miami, make sure and stop by their in-person locations. I mean, don't, because going out makes you a monster, but theoretically do. Boys, it's apropos of today's topic. Since we're talking about the Bible, formative experiences with the Bible, the Dwell Bible is still in a relationship with us, a healthy relationship. One that I hope lasts forever, quite frankly. Pipe, let's just get all the business out of the way up front. Tell us about Dwell Bible.
Yeah, so the episode today, we're going to talk about, I don't know, childhood experiences with the Bible, when the Bible became meaningful, favorite stories. It kind of makes me wonder if somebody is going to include Dwell in their story like 15 years from now. You know, I used to listen to this awesome audio Bible app that I heard about on the Happy Rant, and it really changed my life. Let's hope so. That'd be pretty cool. So Dwell is an audio Bible app. We have partnered with them for, really, what, like 2 years now, something like that. It's been a while. Yeah. And they have, it's not just a straight audio Bible though. They have a whole bunch of features and plans and different things built in to help people engage scripture well. They just rolled out a sleep feature. So if you are looking to, you know, if you've had the habit of going to sleep, watching TV or listening to a podcast or whatever, you can actually listen to scripture. You can turn on the sleep timer. It'll shut off after a certain amount of time, so you don't, you know, miss four chapters of 2 Samuel or something like that. It's just a great way to get scripture into kind of the cracks and margins of your life, the commutes, the exercise, whatever. So go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, dwellapp.io/happyrant to check it out, as well as to get a 20% discount on your subscription. It's less than $2 a month, very affordable, well worth your time to go look at it and your money. Again, it's dwellapp.io/happyrant. You should go check that out.
2 years, Pipe, we've been with Dwell. I feel like we're getting to know them at a deeper level now. You know, it was kind of like the first few months were like the honeymoon, you know, and everybody was so excited. But like now we've been with Dwell day to day. Their beauty is becoming deeper and richer as the relationship
We took a little break, you know, during spring and summer. Granted, I think everybody took a break from everything because COVID sucks. But, you know, there's sort of that necessary like distancing in a relationship to really evaluate where this is going. And we decided it was well worth the commitment, and they decided
absolutely
the same thing.
I don't want to call it a separation. It was more like we just took like a long business trip, and when we got back, they were waiting at the airport.
Yeah, are there sabbaticals, you know, in relationship, Ronnie? Are there sabbaticals in relationships? Because that's really what that felt like. It wasn't a like a hard breakup as much as a kind of a planned upon time apart for mutual benefit.
He's not interested in this. Yeah.
He wasn't even listening.
What Pipe just Ronald, said, everything was 100% true.
Ronald wants to get to social issues, causes, but we're not going to get to that today. We're going to talk about the Bible.
The Bible is a social issue and cause, Ted.
Oh my gosh, dude. Fascinating. No, this is great. We're going to do a whole episode on that. But today we're going to talk about
this is the drum I never stop beating or something.
Dude, it is. It's fascinating.
Is that a
real life thing, or is that a thing you just use to like needle us?
You mean, is that the thing that I've said like 3 times in the last 5 years on the pod? Yeah, that.
Well, but
like 303 times in the last 3 weeks. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, it's been.
I just say it because for some reason it legitimately seems like it riles you up, Big T, and I like that.
It's the most uncomfortable thing in the world right now. Like, and it's a new. Here's what it is. It doesn't rile me up so much as it's just like a new. It's a new and surprising pivot for you. And I wonder how much of it is real life and how much of it is like put on for the show.
Because it's not a pivot. It's just kind of keeping in like with the funniness of the pod and maybe throwing some curveballs, you know, to use a baseball, the Dodgers just won the World Series analogy.
Yeah. Shout out the Dodgers.
Shout out to Ron Say, Steve Garvey. And yeah, Bill Russell.
Man, it's really amazing seeing a team like the Dodgers with just, you know, baseball's smallest payroll. Tiny market.
Oh, I know. Just hard scrabble.
Just David and Goliath story there.
Rags to riches story.
So proud of those tough little scrappers.
Hype. Right. I literally, like, it's so funny because I know what you're talking about, except I don't know what you're talking about. Are the Dodgers, do they rival the Yankees with payroll and all that kind of stuff? I just literally have no idea. Okay.
Yeah.
They're the West Coast Yankees.
They're probably, they probably don't even have a dollar valuation on the team because it's like, I don't know, you'd have to trade an entire metro area to get the Dodgers. They have picked up all the expensive free agents from other teams in recent years. Well, them and the Yankees or in trades. So yeah, they have
100 million plus like budget compared to all the other.
Like, yeah, 200 or 300 million. Now they're a well-run team. They don't just buy players. They've also developed some young guys and they're really smart, but yeah, they have all the advantages too.
Has it always been that way? Because you only hear that ever said about the Yankees, and maybe it's because the Yankees developed that, you know, developed that budget and that reputation before the Dodgers. I'm asking a question.
I think it was because the Yankees are owned by the Steinbrenner family, who is they're sort of like pathologically competitive, and they're like if we want it, we go buy it, and
they just buy players like willy nilly. Like they get the biggest stars from like other teams,
and right, the Dodgers have been more like. The prior ownership was more like, this is a money printing machine, so we'll put money into it and we'll buy some players, but they were never super smart about investing in the team. They just sort of signed guys here and there, and then they made a ton of money because it's this massive market, great TV revenue, whatever. And in the last few years, they've done a lot better job of putting their money to work for them, and that's how they have been, you know, one of the best teams in the National League for several years and now won the World Series.
Well, boys, that's why I really prefer teams like the Oakland A's, who have like GMs like Brad Pitt working for them.
There you go. There you go. I'm kind of surprised you didn't watch even one inning of the World Series, given that the great John Martin's team was playing. I thought that like nostalgia would pull you into a couple of broadcasts at least.
I mean, I don't have cable. Like I don't have TV, so it's like I really could. I mean, I'll watch a clip or something so that when my dad, who is no doubt rolling in his grave right now out of joy and happiness, he'll know that I'm still with him.
How disappointed is he in you that you haven't watched?
If we're going to count the disappointments of John F. Martin to his son, Ronald J. Martin, I mean, baseball is probably, you know, probably outside the top 20, but it's close. You know?
Okay. All right. So yeah, your lack of interest in baseball isn't like the Mount Rushmore of disappointments.
I mean, I played the game. So I played the game with John F., which is what we called him. Like when I would go to the house, I mean, I'd always like be watching Dodger games with him, asking him about the players, you know, commenting on the outfits. Do they remind me, John F., do they wear white at home games or away games? Like the stuff that I just could never remember or get my head wrapped around, he would help.
Dude, he's just dying inside as you're asking these like rudimentary questions about.
Or he's just pumped that like somebody in the family asked.
He's pumped that you're taking an interest.
Absolute.
Because your mom didn't take an interest at all. She didn't join him in that.
She knew what a baseball was. If you put like a baseball, a soccer ball, and a football in front of her, I don't know which one she'd pick.
She was busy driving that huge van.
She's busy driving a huge van. And now that I said that and made her look like she's not intelligent, and since she listens to the program now after last week's app, like I might be in massive trouble right now.
Has the mom app dropped yet?
No, it has not yet. It'll probably drop today or tomorrow. There has been a slight delay in production.
Today being last week, by the time our listeners
listeners will have heard it, if they're faithful listeners, and of course everyone who's tuning into this is.
Yeah, this is getting all Christopher Nolan and confusing right now, man.
I know. Yeah, we're playing with chronology. We're elite now. This is what all the great ones do. But I want to lean into this a little bit. I think this is an interesting topic. Like, what's on the Mount Rushmore of ways that you've disappointed your parents? Like, both of you and me too. I think this is low-key a fascinating topic because we're all three parents now, and we were all three children, of course, at one time. So, like, ways that you've disappointed your parents.
Oh, man.
I feel like all the ways that I've disappointed my parents are things that are like they would disappoint any parent. So it wasn't like my parents had very specific expectations and I didn't take the right job or didn't do well enough in school. It was more like, no, I was just an abject moron. I got caught doing something really stupid or sinful or something. And so their disappointment was much more for my soul than it was like, oh, you are not
any
the
outward thing.
Yeah, yeah, you didn't get into the grad school that we had lined up for you. You didn't, you know, whatever. My parents didn't try to arrange my future very specifically. So thankfully I wasn't a disappointment in that way. I just managed to do it in lots of other ways.
Right. What about you, baby?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably the same a little bit. I think, you know, my dad was so resolutely like blue collar, you know, good values, morals, kind of the American way, you know, meat and potatoes. He was that guy. And I really, you know, I became so artistic at some point that I didn't do it overtly and I didn't do it as a way to be against him. I never did anything to be against my parents, but it was just the path and the direction I took. It was so foreign to my dad and how he grew up and who he was that I guess it would have been disappointing in as much as he just didn't understand it. And, but he oddly knew that as a dad or as a dude that was trying to be a good dad, he needed to support it. So when I look back on Pops, I just see a guy who had this weirdo kid that he was internally in conflict with, but he knew he didn't want to be just because he was so different from himself.
Sure.
That had to have been disappointing when the guy laid his head down on his pillow at night wondering, like, what have I done and what is this all coming to?
Dude, it's like the scene in Zoolander where totally. John Voight, like the blue collar bar, you know, like slugging back beers and everybody's talking about their like tough guy sons and his son is a male model, you know. Because wasn't your brother kind of an artistic weirdo in the same way?
What's that?
Wasn't your brother kind of an artistic weirdo in the same way?
No, so Jason was, he's an artistic guy, but he was never an artistic weirdo. So he would have been more of like a...
I enjoy that you leaned so heavily into wokeness and political correctness the last three episodes, and now we're back to calling creative people weirdos. This feels... I feel at home now.
Since I am one, you know? But he was... he's more of like a blue-collar artist where it's like, let's just make the art, but we're not going to pontificate about it or get like deep about it. Yeah. You know, we're just going to do it. And we're not going to make a big deal about it. Right.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. For sure.
So that would have aligned much more. That would aligned with the old guy a lot better than me, like having weird haircuts and stuff like that. He didn't do that.
Dude, now where do you think you guys got your artistic streaks? Was it from the old guy or was it from like somebody else in your lineage or how did that come about?
Dude, I don't know. People have asked us that and I don't know where that came from. I really don't know. There was nothing. We can't pinpoint it anywhere on either side, to be honest. Not a lot of musicians, not a lot of artists. I don't know. It's just it was the rebel in me, you know. Huh. I'm a rebel.
I was going to say, maybe it was growing up in like idyllic, isolated farmland, spending all that time listening to 8 tracks in the van and going to like a prohibitively conservative Christian school that just sort of like squeezed the creativity out of you. It was like, this has to come out because there's not an outlet for normalcy anywhere.
I mean, yeah, that's probably true, right? But I was like, I was doing weird junk at like 5 years old before all that happened even. So I don't,
dude,
I don't
like,
know.
What are you doing at five?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm just,
what were you into at five?
I'm like writing my own song books, and I'm like wearing weird clothes, and I'm like listening to weird music, and I just loved all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure what Pipe just said helped down the road when I could sort of make it into something for sure. That probably had a part in it. But
I want to lean into something that you said. You characterized yourself as a rebel. Like, do you feel that you've always been rebellious?
I just hate the status quo.
Do you always need something to rebel against? Like, even if conditions are as perfect as they can be in a fallen, broken, bankrupt world, like, are you always going to find something to push against? I'm just curious.
I don't know.
This isn't a value judgment at all.
No, not at all. I like being in this. I like being the weird guy in the system. I like being in the system, but being the quirky, weird guy in the system. But I still want to be in the system.
Let me say this then. This is why Piper and I think like Kansas City is the perfect metro area for you, because it's maybe the most like beige khaki metro area in the country, and it allows you to be the cool weird guy,
or the cool old guy, the cool middle aged,
the cool upper middle aged guy.
Right.
Speak to that. How does that feel? That statement.
I mean,
veracity, truth to that a little bit.
I guess, man, I don't know. Is it that's the heart of the Midwest? I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm willing to give it a try, Big T. Let me just say that I'm open to options. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'm open to Jackson, Tennessee. You tell me. I don't know.
I think it would be more fun. Yeah, Jackson's a nice place. I love Jackson. I think, though, it would be more fun to rebel in Kansas City. There would be more of a palette, more of like a canvas for rebellion there. I don't know.
Rebellion looks different as you get older too, man. You know, rebellion is ridiculous, and you know, it's a little more subtle and you know.
It's super contextual, because like Rob Bell was the rebel in Grand Rapids, which wasn't the rebel anywhere else. He was just like kind of a predictable left leaning. You're like, oh, this is just liberalism repackaged with spiky
hair.
He's
like the least rebellious rebel that ever lived, basically.
Right.
However, ladies and gentlemen.
Dude, and the minute he got to L.A., he got like 1,000% boring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you take him out of Grand Rapids and the shtick doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, the minute he started dating Oprah, it was like, oh, cool. There's Robbie, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think Ronnie would be like a unicorn in a place like Jackson. You know, just present Ronnie, not like you don't have to redo yourself, because
we've got like a Ronnie community in Jackson, though, which is weird. Really? We've got like the Midtown, like breaking our arms, patting ourselves on the back for how like woke we are. And like we've got like a little enclave of that here in Jackson.
And how offended is Ronnie at that description and being lumped
No. I'm not saying that's where Ronnie's at. I'm just saying we have like a little bit of a thriving hipster community. It would be like the East Nashville of here, except it's way smaller. But we do have it. You know what I mean? Where in Kansas City probably has that too. But I feel like every metro area has like an enclave of quote super unique people that are all the same wherever you go.
Or just like all the unique people elsewhere.
Exactly. But no, I think he could thrive in Jackson. I actually think he could thrive at my college. I think my college is ready for a Ronnie, like in the Bible department. I think that would be a good fit.
Get that D in
more than a dude just sliding into home base, aka the Bible department, man.
Dude, just sliding into the Bible department. You know, I mean,
at least they pay really well.
Well, yeah, dude, you're gonna have riches beyond your wildest dreams. Get ready for that. I mean, get ready to buy that lake house you've been looking at for a while.
Seriously, how bad? Can we just be honest for a second?
Yeah.
How bad are the salaries at institutions like that in departments that too?
Okay, so I've got to tiptoe lightly around this because I know
you can talk in generalities.
I'll say this: Jackson is a very affordable place to live. And I don't know what everybody else makes. Like, I'm of that generation, and you're probably like this too, baby. Like growing up where I grew up in the Midwest, like, you didn't talk about money with people. Like, right. You didn't talk about how much you made relative to how much they make or whatever. But, like, I'll say this. The Lord's been kind. We're able to live a nice life in Jackson on what we make at the university. So it's not like, okay, so there's a certain personality type that likes to go all martyr about, like, teaching a Christian college. And these are the people that delude themselves. This is fascinating. These are the people that delude themselves that, like, if they hadn't, like, lowered themselves to teaching at a Christian college, they would just be raking financially elsewhere.
That's what it's like, bro. My elementary Christian schools used to just, like,
oh, dude, yeah, they're convinced that they would be, like, it would be raining money if they went, quote unquote, into industry.
To be fair, though, there's a lot of money.
Place for you in industry.
But there's a lot of money in that philosophy doctorate, though, Ted. Like, what am I missing?
Oh, of course, great buck in that racket. You know, I mean, you're just going to, you know, you're going to, it's going to be raining money.
They,
but no,
they too could manage a Chick-fil-A somewhere.
Exactly. Dude, my philosopher friends are going to come at me now. No, they won't.
It's all right. They just have a lot of questions and no answers. It's just
a lot of, questions and no answers. Kind of like the emergent church. And that did sell well for a while. There was, like, a good buck in the emergent church from, I don't know, 2004 to 2007. But yeah, to answer your question, baby, it's not so bad. It's not as bad as people make it sound. And it probably depends on the school too. I mean, there's a wide spectrum of, like, financially healthy Christian schools to, like, ones that are barely making it, you know.
What it makes a huge difference where the school is too. Like, I was talking to a friend who's on faculty at Wheaton recently, and you know, he made the comment that Wheaton doesn't pay that well, but he was speaking in reference to living in Wheaton, which is just bonkers expensive,
just
whereas
miserable.
Jackson is a way more affordable place to live. So the same salary at the two places is probably like getting a 20% raise moving from Wheaton to Jackson on the same salary or something.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, the like Chicago area, you're living in like a hovel if you teach at Wheaton. I don't know. I assume. but the other thing you run into at Christian colleges is that a lot of people who, like, teach at these places, and it seems to be the same people that do the, like, woe is me thing about money. They, like, they have rich families, like, they come from money, you know, so they're not living, like, a bad life.
That's how you end up with a philosophy degree.
Dude, that's it. Because that's how you end up with an English or a philosophy degree.
You've had the luxury of sitting around and reading and thinking your whole life instead of,
somebody,
you know,
in your
doing
life
stuff.
Worked hard at some point. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I don't know. There's lots of ways to make it work. But it's, I'll say this, baby. It's not a bad lifestyle. Like, I really enjoy it. I enjoy the lifestyle.
What's your favorite part about it, Big T?
Honestly, like, being around, and this is going to sound so cliche, but I'll unpack it. Like, being around young people who, like, when I get students, they always have new ideas. You know what I mean? And they're enthusiastic about life and about what they want to do in a way that people our age just aren't. People our age, like, no shade at anybody in particular, but people are just boring when they get to be our age. Like, all they want to talk about is their kids or their diet or some boring crap like that. And, like, young people just aren't boring in that same way, you know? And it's kind of a pleasure.
Their
what?
Their kids or their diet. It's so true.
Dude, it's so true. Is it not true, though?
Oh, 100.
They're like, bro, I'm doing keto. I'm feeling really good. It's like, I would literally rather have you, like, kick me in the junk than have this conversation with you. You know? That's how boring it is. But yeah, no, the kids are a lot of fun, man. They bring a lot of energy and life. And I don't know, I ask them about their backgrounds and stuff, and that's always really fascinating. And it's a good deal, man. It's a good little gig.
What do you like about the sketch?
Dude, the sketch is nice. The sketch is like, and this is going to run more like person to person. The sketch is theoretically nice in the sense that you do get your summers off. You get a nice long break over Christmas. But, like, I kind of work all the time and never relax. So, like, it's not as amazing and idyllic for me as it could be. I'm trying to make it more amazing and idyllic by, like, not doing so much in the summers. But I've not been super successful at that. So I would love to have that idyllic, you know, oh, it's summer and I'm just chilling for 3 months. But that really hasn't been the case for me. And part of that is like, I still can't like leave money on the table. You know what I mean? So if somebody dangles a little speaking gig or a book or whatever, I'm just doing it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's probably more of a me problem than a schedule problem. But the schedule is nice. The schedule is theoretically very nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm. But I'll say this too. If you're good at it, like I think the professors that take their work seriously and really are good at it, they work really hard. You know, like you're not sitting around during the day, like you're meeting with students and advising and serving on committees and just doing stuff that like keeps you busy. And the ones that are, you know, just kind of playing out the string and I don't know, resting on their tenure or whatever, they're probably the ones that are no good at it anyway. You know,
strong parallel with the pastorate there in terms of those who are good at it versus.
Yeah, that's a great point, Pipe. That's a really good point. Yeah.
But how do you, gee, let me ask you something, man.
Yeah.
Like for somebody that, you know, so you could just run off that syllabus every year, or is it something where the good teachers are constantly like refining?
Yeah, I think you're constantly refining because for me, and you're probably this way too, I get bored really easy. So like I tweak the syllabus just for my own edification. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to be bored. So I'm always like kind of throwing new stuff at them and doing different things. And there are things that stay static that stay the same from year to year. Like some of the content that I want to cover doesn't change, but the way I cover it changes. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And my guess is you would be the same way. Like you'd probably get bored doing the same stuff in the same way year after year.
I mean, it's the same sermon every week, but yeah, I get your point.
Yeah. Well, and the good thing about being good pastors like you guys are, and also shout out to Pipe, he's now officially a man of the cloth in that he, can I talk about this, Pipe?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to let anything out of that.
No, you're not outing me. It's fine.
Yeah, Piper passed his ordination exam, Big R. So whoa. You guys are colleagues now in a way. That's, I mean, we've always been colleagues on the show.
That's big.
Yeah, I'm in a limbo state as it stands, though, because I passed my ordination exam, and now they're, well, let's see. This will be released after people find out. But then it'll be announced to the church, and then there's like a month of people getting a chance to get all their questions answered, and then there's a vote. So like end of November, we'll find out if I'm an employed pastor or just an ordained guy.
There we go. That's big. Pipe. Congrats, man.
And yeah. To clarify, it's at the church I'm already at. I'm not pastoring elsewhere for listeners. I'm not moving anywhere. I like my church.
Dude, I'm betting on Pipe on this one. I'm buying a lot of Pipe stock right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to pass. I mean, I think we'll all be surprised when it gets announced that he didn't pass. So, I'm going to bet on it.
Yeah. Let's bet on Pipe. But yeah, does that help, baby? I think you would approach the boredom in the same way. And I'll say this, too. Back to like parental disappointments. I think the thing that disappointed my parents the most is probably similar to yours, Big R, in that I just like freelanced for 15 years. And I think what they wanted more than anything for me was to like go to work for a solid company and never quit. And, you know, like just have benefits and pay, which I do have that now. But it is getting a little boring. I mean, it the nature of it is that it gets boring. And I think you have to keep it interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, baby. I get it, man. It's interesting because I think like our generation takes a little bit longer to get to some of those, like those kind of stable societal elements that our generation got to like at 19.
Yeah. Know? Well, and to be clear, my parents were absolutely right. And I wish I'd done this a long time ago, but I had to do the Gen X angsty BS thing of I don't know, seeking fulfillment, which is stupid.
You mean seeking fulfillment that the boomers are never going to allow us to have? Yeah, that. Correct.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I've never been mad at the boomers. Maybe it's just because I had nice parents, you know, like I really legitimately had exceedingly nice parents. So,
yeah. Well, let me just put it to you like this. If you were not a Gen Xer, you would be you'd be the president of the university that you're just a prof at right now.
Well, so, dude, and that's interesting because I have absolutely no interest in being administration of any kind.
Right.
So I think that's a good point.
You would never get it anyway. Right. It's just taken all of the ambition out of you. Correct.
Yeah. Well, for that.
Definitely. Okay. Counterpoint. It could have taken the ambition out of you, or through freelancing for 15 years and arriving at this place late, you have a greater sense of the kind of thing you want to do for as long as you are employed.
The only reason why you freelance for 15 years is because you knew there was no hope. There was no other path.
Well, no, I just mean arriving at the place where you're like, yeah, I don't want that promotion because that's work that I would hate.
Yeah.
It's kind of historically an anomaly because, you want to climb the ladder, get as high as possible, but there's something to be said for being like, no, I'm a better teacher than I would be an administrator. You know, I'm a better, I'm a better
1,000%
creator than I am manager of creators, et cetera.
Yeah, no, all that's true, except for if there's not even a ladder to begin with, you're not trying to take that first step anyway. The boomers said, we are not putting down the ladder to you. Sorry.
And maybe one of the key sort of ethics of Gen X was to not believe in the ladder. You know what I mean? Like the ladder wasn't a thing that we looked at and went, ooh, that's attractive. I want to do that. And in fact, disdaining and like eschewing the ladder, it was a part of like the quote unquote theology of Gen X, you know? Would you agree with that, Bigar?
Yeah, I mean, I would. I'm being mostly funny, but I think...
No, I know. But there's a grain of like interest in this for me.
I think the general cynicism that Gen Xers kind of get... like, you know, level that is because, again, you're kind of looking at this generation that has, you know, that kind of betrayed their values. They came into power, and because we have good medicine now and they don't die, they basically said, and we are going to keep that power.
Yeah. And well, to be fair, like, I'm ready to betray my values now. Like, I'm ready to have the money that they have.
That's what I'm saying. But they set a system now to where it's going to go to the generation that's coming up behind us, which basically are going to be more like boomers than we ever could possibly imagine.
Dude, and they totally are. And being that I teach them for a living, like they really have no interest in values or like artistic integrity. Like they want to be famous and they want money. They're going to get it, which is kind of refreshing. And it's like, I don't know, like nakedness, I guess, you know,
if I heard you correctly, you said they're the most like the boomers, or did you say the opposite? Okay.
Because we skipped a generation, our generation got passed over and forgotten about. So I think the power is not going to go to us. So it's going to go to the generation. I think it's going to just end up falling into the hands of the generations below us.
It's because we spent too many years like, whining about how we didn't want power. It's our own fault.
No, I don't think the power is going to skip generations. I think it's going to be spread out because the new climb the ladder is start your own thing, which means everybody has power over very little. So, and then there's going to be like half a dozen people who turn into the next, you know, Jeff Bezos or whatever. And they're like, oh, well, you guys all started your own little bitty things, but I have capital, so I'm going to buy your little bitty things. And so it's going to be... I don't think it's going to be like a handing off of power as much as it is. Everybody just tries to start their own thing, and it's a world of like mediocre entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And I think you're right about that, Pipe. Because by definition, not every entrepreneur can be a great one, you know, and a lot of ideas are mediocre.
And by statistics, most entrepreneurial ventures fail.
That's it. Yeah. But yet everybody thinks theirs is going to be amazing. Which is both the like seductive part of it that you use it to like ignore the reality that it's probably going to fail. I don't know. It's fascinating. Like the headspace behind all that stuff is really interesting to me. Baby, anything else to add on like Gen X stuff? This is good. I think we wanted to be the Ethan Hawke character in the movie and not the Ben Stiller character. In Reality Bites. Did you ever see Reality Bites, baby?
Yeah.
Where Ben's, yeah, you did. You don't want to admit that you did because it's a little mainstream for you. But
it didn't,
but
yeah, it didn't speak to me, but I did see it.
It wasn't British enough.
Yeah. it didn't speak to me either, but it was sort of, it's a time capsule of a certain like ethos, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, the next generation, it wouldn't even like resonate with them on any level. But people of a certain age understand like what statements like that mean. Wow. This has been fun, you guys. Here's the deal. Let me just level with you. We're at like 35 and a half minutes. We haven't gotten even remotely into the topic that we had planned to get into today. But this has been, for me at least, and I want to hear you guys on this, it's been surprisingly good. Where are we at on that? Where are we at on both the goodness of how this has been versus like, do we want to keep going? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I think it's surprising. I think it's, you know, I think it's one of those apps where we just kind of go, all right, didn't see that coming. I mean, there's something about every app we do that is like that, right?
I mean, this isn't an all-timer. I'm not saying this goes on like
that. I have to say that I'm utterly shocked that Gen X guys really love to talk about how Gen X was forgotten. It's just totally out of left field. It caught me completely off guard. Wow. It's way off brand.
Also, Gen X guys being totally obsessed with themselves. What a surprise.
Man, I'm... Yeah, so this has been a real novel experience for me, guys.
We had really bad parenting experiences, so we're just... Somebody needs to love us and care about us, you know? I mean, right?
Except I think we both had, like, above-average parenting experiences. In my case, like, I had a great one. I can't blame my parents for anything. Everything that's gone wrong in my life is absolutely 1,000% my own fault.
I mean, you got a lot of rose-colored glasses about your parents, T. We got to break that a little more honest.
Man, I do. Do you think there are things about my parents that I'm like glossing over?
Certainly not. I don't know your parents, but nothing can be that great. And I mean, dude, you have some significant things you bring to the table that makes me think there has to be something there. There's something.
Interesting. Go a little deeper into that.
Well, I don't know that I can. We don't have a lot of time because you have a hard out, you know. So
I will say having rose-colored glasses about your parents is a great way to get older, because I've watched people in our kind of collective generation kind of come to terms with their parents, and sometimes that means reconciliation. Like there was a lot of resentment, and then they came to a place of better relationship. A lot of times it means like I learned who my parents really were, and it breaks things down in unnecessary ways. And so, yeah, I think, as long as you're not like blocking out trauma, I think you're probably at a great spot. And it's like, all the stuff that wasn't great was not significant enough to be defining. That sounds really great to me.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
What you just
said. Not significant enough to be defining, I think, is a good way to put it. And I mean, of course, they weren't perfect, but I think at the end of the day, they did the best they could with what they had. And yeah, like I'm loyal to them. You know, like they were loyal to me, so I'm loyal to them. But not to the exclusion of any sort of like great truths or whatever. I don't know. We could do therapy at part two next week. We could go deep into our parents. That would, I'm sure, be fascinating for
American kid. I think that's what it comes down to. I think it's, and again, there's not one generation that I mean, that's probably not entirely true either, but there's how different generations, how they prepared their kids, how they coddled their kids.
There's some major coddling taking place like now. Like the way our generation coddles their kids is now, I sound like an old person. It's kind of borderline unconscionable.
It's like criminal, you mean?
Yeah. and it's a weird like tightrope that we walk in the college business where it is mom and dad who are writing the checks. So we can't go too hard at them for like basically moving to college with their kids. I mean, it's all but like back to school minus the humor, you know, the Dangerfield movie from the 80s. But there's a lot of like hyper involvement.
There's a competitive side of me that absolutely loves that though. Cause I feel like for any of us who are steadfastly against coddling our kids, which is not the same as not loving our kids for you listeners who might be, you know, pearl clutching right now. I feel like we are setting our kids up to run roughshod over a bunch of sensitive mama's boys who never learned how to solve a problem on their own or be resilient in the face of difficulty.
Yeah, no, I agree, Pipe. And I talk about that very thing with my students all the time. Like, there's a massive opportunity here if you can develop even like a modicum of grit. There's going to be, yeah, a lot that you can do. Yeah. So it's interesting. There's more I could say about the coddling, but, I don't want to sound like I'm 85 years old. Also,
we're at that place in life though, where we can have a foot in the, like, I'm a hurt Gen Xer, and also I'm 85 years old and grumping at the young kid. So it's kind of a great, I think that's like the high point of the middle age.
Dude, because honestly, it's
you can just sort of lean into either.
Yes, both of those things you described are very fun in their own way. It's sometimes a blast to be the hurt Gen Xer, and it's also super fun to be the cranky like old dude. So let's embrace both. I think that's the message of the program, which is probably a way worse message than the original thing we were going to talk about, but. But it's what we ended up doing today, boys. And you know what we did? We got in the studio this morning. It's early. And we made some radio.
Yeah, so, we had some grit. We overcame some adversity and did this thing.
We overcame some things. I mean, we all three woke up in our really nice houses. And
boys and girls, you too could achieve this level of greatness with some grit.
Absolutely. You too could sit on your computer in your really nice, comfortable house and talk about yourself for 45 minutes. This is the very definition. This is what John Martin wanted for you all those years, baby. just punching the clock, just being a lunch pail guy on this program.
Yeah, building up those calluses on your vocal cords and your ego.
That's it, dude. That's it. We've made our dads proud this morning, boys. They can hold their heads a little bit higher knowing that we blow via our computers for 45 minutes, doing what we always do, boys, wandering to and fro. Throughout a few topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind Podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. And even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind Podcast, visit lifeaudio.com